This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
What? I'm learning so much right now.
And Brock Rom.
Oh, I think Justin
go
froze.
Down.
Yeah,
oh, okay.
There is.
Sorry, you froze.
Sorry, I'm having a tough go here, freezing them.
No, that's a what, man.
We're heading over to the UK to talk with Jake Paul of Formula One. Jake is a graphic designer, but he initially started out in law and finance. We get into the challenges of starting late in his journey, hustling to make up for lost time, and of course, the benefits of doing what you enjoy.
Let's go at 35 here. 35. That'll work.
All right. I like the I like the singing in the background.
Yeah, I'm doing this with my toddler, but he's very engaged, very interested. It's just whoever edits this is not going to be fun for them.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Well, we're excited to be joined by Jake Paul, who is a designer for Formula One, but has quite a unique background, ranging from law school, getting into finance before getting into design. But Jake, let's just start right off the top with giving an explanation of what got you into design and what you do with Formula One today.
Yeah, sure. So first off, thanks for having me. Second off, yeah, I mean, look, I've always been, you know, like one of those art kids, I guess. Back in school, at least over here in the UK, when I was going, graphic design was kind of this product design thing. You know, you'd come out with like 3D plastic molds of things, and you'd have to design like a pencil case or something. So it was never something that kind of really crossed my radar. But one of my dad's best friends, he used to do a lot of like drawing, cartooning, stuff like that. And I remember, you know, going to his house one day and, you know, he had like a very early Wacom, and he's like, you know, I draw on this and then, you know, I print out the drawing. And my mind was like, what? I didn't know you could do that. And then, yeah, I guess I just kind of bit by bit fell into it and was just really passionate about it. I mean, it's kind of fusing computers, fusing art, and it's kind of this weird hybrid, I guess. So, yeah, look, I went to university, college for you guys to do law. I was like, I'm going to be a lawyer. I think I'd watched a bit too much Suits at that point. And yeah, I mean, halfway through, I've got a job as a designer for the university. Just kind of landed on my lap. They were like, oh, you're always on Photoshop, aren't you? I'm like, yeah, yeah. Like, I'm usually, you know, Photoshopping my friends' faces onto, you know, random celebrities or weird bodies or something. And yeah, you know, it turned into, you know, this job that I kind of thought, awesome, it's going to make me a little bit of income while I'm a poor student. And then I was kind of like, wow, this is a job. Like, this is awesome. Like, I'm being paid to do what I do, you know, in my free time. You know, I'm designing icons, I'm designing logos and stuff. I was like, I didn't really realize what I was doing was what a designer does as a job. So, yeah, long story short, I didn't want to disappoint my parents. They've been running around telling everyone in church and, you know, their friends and stuff, you know, he's going to be a lawyer. He's going to be this, you know, amazing barrister, solicitor, and, you know. So I was like, okay, I'll do the rest of my degree. You know, we'll put this to one side. It's great. But, you know, I came here to do one thing, and that was to get a law degree. Got my law degree, went into law, hated every second of it. It was really stressful. People were, you know, really career orientated for a job that I wasn't really that bothered about. And yeah, pretty much I left that, went into finance because I was like, awesome, going to make some real money now, you know, playing with the big boys, work hard, play hard type deal. And yeah, discovered quite quickly that I hated that too. So I was like, this is not great. I mean, you know, my mental health, my sort of physical health at that point, it took a real beating just from the long hours I was doing, the commuting I was doing. And I was like, look, I'm not going to reach 40 if I carry on like this. This is just too much. Like, I must have been about 25. And I was like, nah, like, I'm going to pack this in and I'm just going to try and go for that graphic design job or career that I always envisioned, that kind of was like, this is 10 out of 10. You know, if you asked me at any of those points from, you know, the point I got the job as a designer, if I wanted to, you know, do you want to be the president, astronaut, I don't know, any job in the world, I'd take graphic designer, you know, no lying from me on that. And yeah, I quit my job on the spot one day, kind of had reached my breaking point with my boss, and I kind of blagged or sort of suggested to people I was going to be a graphic designer. I didn't have a portfolio. I didn't have any understanding as to what it would maybe really take. I just kind of went, oh, I've done it before, so maybe I can carry on. And yeah, I think I spent 2 months learning the hard way what is in a portfolio. I must have applied for a couple, probably close to 1,000 jobs over 2 months. It was a long process of being unemployed in my bedroom while my dad is kind of like, are you going to get a job? Or you maybe you should just go back to banking. And yeah, I got a lucky break where I gave a guy a one side of A4 with three of the smallest mock-ups you'll ever see in your life, because I was really embarrassed. I didn't know what he would want. And yeah, I sort of show up to the interview and he goes, so you got a law degree? You just didn't even look at this, you know, portfolio. And I use that term extremely loosely. He didn't look at that. He's like, you know, you want to be a graphic designer? I was like, yeah. He was like, you got a law degree? I was like, yeah. He's like, you must really want to be a graphic designer. I was like, you have no idea. I was like, trust me, if you give me an opportunity, I will prove it to you just how much it means to me. Anyway, he gave me a week trial and then he gave me a job, and it kind of, you know, started from there and, you know, kind of progressed and fell into sport and fell into Formula One.
Yeah, there's so many different avenues I feel like we could go down just based on that whole outline of your background. And I think that's really interesting. The Wacom that you brought up, I have a Wacom that I really enjoy, and it's basically a mouse replacement for people who aren't aware of what that is. I'm struggling to decide which way to go because I think
to me, I think what's interesting is I think people who are kind of self-taught designers are the most interesting because I think, and I've talked about this in previous podcasts, I think some people inherently have a good eye for design. Did you feel that you always had a good eye for design and then you built upon that, or what areas did you really focus on early on in learning to be a graphic designer that helped you the most?
Yeah, I would probably say that. Like, I represented like my school in, like art competitions, or, you know, like we would do like a showcase basically at the end of our sort of finals for art. They put all of them up in the school like hall, and, you know, mine is still one that oddly people talk about. It was like this Jimi Hendrix in space, like crazy psychedelic thing. So it was kind of, I guess I just fallen into it, like almost learning these different skills without really knowing what it was leading to, or even that I was aware that I was learning skills. And I just found it fun. It was like a way to sort of unwind and let loose, I guess. Yeah, I mean, in terms of like skill set, I would say when I left that banking job, that was kind of, I turned around to myself and said, this is where I have to now relearn Photoshop, because at this point I hadn't touched it in maybe 2-3 years at all. There wasn't enough time in my schedule. So it's kind of like, oh yeah, this tool, you know, I didn't know how to use the pen tool, for example. And it was kind of like, I gave myself a crash course in terms of like, how does this thing kind of work? Illustrator was something I'd never used before. Didn't really understand what a vector was. So again, it was looking up a lot of tutorials, looking, you know, what does that tool do? And then finding a YouTube tutorial or an explanation or whatever it was, just to understand it some more. And then I would say what I'm good at is taking apart other people's work and trying to understand and rationalize how they've got to that end point. Almost like I gave you a finished Lego piece and you took all those Lego bricks out of it and like, oh, so that's how you built the base of the house. And oh, so the roof isn't just like a upside down V, there's like supports in there to hold it up. So, I always tell people look at other people's work and, you know, try to understand how they've got there, you know, what tools did they use and stuff like that.
So when you get into learning the pen tool, learning different parts of Illustrator, learning what a vector is, learning how the differences between Photoshop and Illustrator and what, you know, where their strengths are, how do you immerse yourself in the tools and how do you go about deciding what tool you want to learn?
That's a pretty good question, to be honest. So I always knew like pen tool was something that like I'd seen people talk about it, I guess, on sort of graphic for it. I mean, this is 2016, I think. So I wouldn't necessarily say that YouTube was kind of flush with designers and tutorials and stuff like that. I was picking from like places like Creative Block off the top of my head, maybe Reddit as well. I would basically just look and see what people's workflows were. If they mentioned it, like, oh, what tool do you use? What, you know, you'd find people in the design community are quite evaluative. I think, you know, they evaluate their work so much that it's not so much that, you know, they don't take it personally if you ask them point blank, or they're quite willing on, you know, a forum or a public domain to sort of be like, oh yeah, I wish I was better at 3D, for example. So I'd kind of look at what other people's strengths and weaknesses were, and then try to kind of, you know, build my own case list, I guess, of, oh, okay, so I don't know anything about Illustrator, and then start to whittle it down and almost make yourself a curriculum and look at what sort of, you know, what college courses do as well. I was looking at a lot of their sort of syllabus and trying to work out, okay, so they do like, I don't know, color theory. I'm going to look at some color theory bits and bobs. So yeah, I mean, you kind of have, there's a high degree of motivation needed to do it, because no one's going to turn around and tell you like, oh, hey, you know, for, you know, volume one of your academia, your self-taught academia, you're going to do X, Y, and Z. You have to really go out of your way and research. And being a law student and having to research, you know, thick tomes of books at all hours of the night, it's something that's well within my skill set.
I was wondering that. It sounded very in line with, you know, yeah, practicing law. But that's great. So when you, I guess I think that is a question that I hear quite often is, okay, well, there's a whole bunch of YouTube tutorials. This person does something and it's cool, and I want to learn how to do that. It sounds like what you are saying is it mattered more that you built a good foundation and a good foundational skill set so that you could create content that you were proud of, and you were building your skill set. What does the plan look like when you started? Did you sit down and say, okay, this is what my next 3 months look like? This is what I want to learn. These are my objectives? Or was it like a week to week thing or a month to month thing?
To be honest, it might have even been a day to day thing. Again, like, learning is to me kind of fun, I guess. So I'm not going to learn something that I'm not interested in. So there wasn't much point me looking into, I don't know, video production stuff, because at that time I was like, I am only interested in graphic design, getting my foot in the door. I guess it would probably be on a week to week basis if I was really thinking about it. Just, you know, what can I look back on next week and kind of go, awesome, I didn't know how to do X, Y, and Z. Now I do. What's the next block in terms of, you know, that tool or that thing?
And where do you pull inspiration from when you are going to create a design? How much of it is you're trying to solve a problem and figuring out what that problem is and going from there? And how much is it pulling inspiration from different sources, and what might some of those sources be?
I guess it's probably a mix of the two, because I always see every single project that I do as a learning experience. Like, what can I do that I haven't done before? Because again, like, maybe I just get bored easily. I don't know. I just want to be able to constantly push my own boundary, because I just don't see that, you know, that I gave up a lot of money to become a graphic designer. I mean, made it back now, obviously, in terms of, you know, being further down my career now. But I wouldn't have got up and left that desk if I didn't really want to be a graphic designer. So I'm not going to waste time, you know, I don't know, I'm just going to put the same graphic out six different times with, you know, a different person on it and hope that no one notices. It's all about, you know, what's my maximum return and stuff like that. So it's always a learning experience, and it's also trying to solve a problem to a degree. So a lot of what I put out at the moment is F1 based, I guess, because I personally see a gap in terms of content that we as a sport and as an industry are putting out at the moment. So it's kind of like, okay, how do I fix this? I watch far too much American sports, and I see what, you know, guys like you are putting out, and, you know, people in the industry are putting out, and I'm like, awesome, I really like what the NFL are doing. So how do I put an F1 spin on an NFL graphic? And it kind of goes from there. So, you know, if I'm drawing inspiration nowadays, it's probably, you know, I'll go through Behance. I've started to connect a lot more with designers. So it's almost like the inspiration comes to me. I'm just plugged into what I'm interested in. You know, if I was now to switch my interest to architecture, I'm sure I'd start looking for hashtags and, you know, people on Instagram, people on Behance, people on Pinterest, and kind of going from that.
Can we dive into a little bit about what you do with Formula One and a little bit more about what you're trying to accomplish there? Because I'm not fully familiar with Formula One as a fan, and I remember I had a job in a restaurant years ago, and there was our sous chef was huge into NASCAR, and I've never been a NASCAR fan, and I didn't get it. But when he started talking about the different levels of the tires and how it impacted the race, and there's so much into the nitty gritty, that I was a lot more interested that way. So I'm wondering if you can talk us through what it looks like from your end when you're creating a design for Formula One, and what your cadence looks like from races weekly basis.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I'm not a super new convert to Formula One, but I went to, I worked at a sports agency before I worked at Formula One, and they did a lot of sponsors and clients were in that world. And I went to the interview and sort of, I suppose the equivalent would be me asking what team Michael Jordan played for. It was quite a load. Like, they asked me, you know, do you watch it? I was like, no, not really. And then I asked them, you know, does Lewis Hamilton still drive? Is he still a thing? And I kind of regretted it as soon as it came out my mouth, but actually they were quite good sports. And it turned out that, you know, me not having such a diehard enthusiasm for the sport wasn't the worst thing in the world, because, you know, as I said, I'm big into American sports. So it's kind of bringing a different dynamic, I guess, or a different sort of viewpoint to what we do. So, I mean, look, I like it. You kind of have to, when your entire job and your world revolves around it. It's interesting on a technical level. I think it's interesting on a drama level. And it's just kind of crazy watching these guys get in these, fighter jets, basically, and, you know, try not to die almost going around the, you know, if one of us got in it would be crazy. But, you know, from a week to week basis, it's, you know, our entire week as graphic designers revolve around a race weekend. So most of the time, as soon as the season starts, I think, you know, in a normal non-COVID year, the maximum sort of revolution around that race weekend is maybe 2 weeks. Usually it's, you know, back to back to back to back, and it's kind of intense. It really depends. From, like, you know, from a sports agency point of view, it was really, really crazy having to deal with clients and sponsors and all their activations. And then from an in-house at F1, it's much the same, but we're a bit more laser focused. I find, you know, we're dealing with the signage side of things. We've got a in-house broadcast team as well that are in another office just outside of London. And it's kind of, how do we synergize all of these different, you know, routes into the sport and kind of make it interesting and exciting? Because, you know, as a sports fan, Formula One is a sleeping giant, in my opinion, and it's just starting to kind of, you know, go through the gears. And, you know, it's a worldwide global sport. I think we're like 10-12 million followers on Instagram, so it's not it's not just, you know, a couple of guys in the back garden on some go-karts is a big deal. And it's how do we capitalize on that and, you know, grow it and really make it something that people want to watch on a week-to-week basis.
I think you're absolutely right. I think every friend I've ever had that's been into F1 is a huge F1 fan. Like, there's no in between, right? You're either a fanatic or you're a diehard F1 fan.
They are
fan.
The craziest fans. Like, end of story. Like, you know, soccer football fans. I look at American football fans. There's nothing on this planet like a motorsport Formula One fan. And as my Twitter mentions, will testify.
You mentioned being a big fan of American sports. What's one thing, maybe design-wise, you picked from F1? I think everybody's sport influences the way they design. What's one thing that you did pick up from F1 once you got there that you maybe incorporated into your designs?
I guess a sense of motion. I think we're quite lucky. I mean, in my design career, like, I took a almost like a sabbatical from sport for about 8 to 9 months and was working for a print company. And you kind of, you know, reality hits you quite hard when you go from putting, you know, these sleek race cars that, you know, have all these different crazy angles and, you know, technical things just opposed next to some, you know, fighter jet warrior looking guy. And then, you know, you go to some business cards and some, I don't know, post-it notes. You're kind of like, oh. I think you take from it just that sense of motion. You're constantly trying to convey that fast. And I mean, you're helped because the cars look fast. It's constantly, I think, just that subtle thing in the back of your head, like, this looks slow. It looks too stationary. It looks too static. And how do you sort of, you know, rev the excitement sort of level right up?
You talked about wanting to grow F1 as an international brand. My guess is that's a big push from the organization. When you're designing, how much do you keep that in mind? Do you modify designs for different international markets? How much does that play day to day into your design role?
Yeah, I mean, we have to factor in. I mean, a lot of the time we design something and I only speak English for my sins, but, you know, I design, I don't know, Lewis Hamilton, world champion 7 times. And I'm not really thinking about, you know, will it fit on there in another language? I'm just thinking, cool, that looks great. Job done. Next thing. But there are, you know, different markets, different countries, different industries. It has to translate across. And that's something that I think we all probably have to have in the back of our head. Yeah, I mean, look, it also helps that we've got a broadcast team that do a hell of a job in terms of the video production and, you know, on-site and stuff like that. So I think as a sport and as creatives, yeah, it probably is kind of ingrained in us that you need to be a little bit more sort of versatile in what you do. You have to kind of think several steps ahead in terms of, okay, right, I think this is a poster right now, but there's a chance it could get turned into a t-shirt and then a brochure. And then how is it going to look next to the track and stuff like that? So it's definitely an acquired skill, I think, just because we are the, you know, as I said, it's a global sport, but we only have one office. There is not like we've got, you know, the LA office and we've got the South Africa office. There's one office, it's in central London, and we are responsible for everything. So, yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned the crazy angles of the cars and, you know, designing for speed. How often do you take or even get down to the level of a driver specifically or a team? And what does that give and take usually look like for you, and how much do you infuse some of those crazy angles of the cars and the speed into what you're doing?
So is it in terms of sort of our relationship with our teams and our drivers?
Yeah.
So we're a weird one because we, you know, the NFL can dictate to all of the different teams, you're all wearing Nike from next week, or starter jackets are back. You know, it's very kind of, what the league says goes. Formula One has a very strange or unique agreement. That is that F1 is the league, if you will, but the teams are, they can do whatever they want. So if they want to have a sponsor from, you know, Dubai, they can have that sponsor. If they want to have a different manufacturer for their drivers' uniforms, they can do that. And it's, they're all completely independent from each other and from Formula One. So, you know, we couldn't go running in and start telling them, you know, your driver, you should be in this advert for us. It's a conversation as opposed to a dictatorship. And, you know, that obviously brings its own baggage because of, you know, sponsor clashes and things of that nature. So we'll never, you know, unless there's a new agreement in place, there'll never be a point where Formula One is telling people that they have to be in X, Y, and Z for this photo shoot. It's an agreement between all of the teams and, you know, the managing directors or team principals.
Yeah, it's interesting because I would almost think that that would make creating graphics at your at the level that you're at through Formula One more difficult, because there's a lot more things to keep track of, because every team is doing something totally different potentially.
Yeah, I mean, because you'll have their sponsor get upset because their logo isn't, you know, it's slightly obscured, or you know, we've got like a three car rule, for example, so we can't be seen to be playing favorites. It's, you know, it's the politics of it, I think, that we're constantly navigating. So obviously, you know, if we put a graphic out, you can't just have one car on it, because otherwise it will look like we're promoting that one team rather than all of the teams in the sport. So we'll always put three cars on there, three drivers, you know, try and appeal to, you know, if we're in England, we'll put an English driver on the front potentially. And then, you know, maybe another English driver and a French driver, you know, things like that, that you have to factor.
Yeah, and you just brought up something moving your track, wherever your track is that weekend, all over the place for the event, right? What kind of challenges does that impose for the design?
Yeah, I mean, we, especially this year with COVID, and we've raced in different countries that we don't usually, you know, they're not usually on our schedule because of, you know, travel restrictions and things like that. It's a logistical juggling act is probably the best way. We've got guys that are on the ground, and they'll go and sort of, maybe they measure things up and sort of come back and tell us, you know, it's X by Y. We need to have a banner, you know, X size, whatever that is. And it really does boil down to knowing what the sort of asset list is in as far advance as possible and kind of running with that. And, you know, we've got sort of on track printers as well. So if there's anything, you know, last minute, or, you know, something needs fixing, someone tripped over, there's a massive hole in a banner, then that can be resolved on site as well.
I think it could be a good time to get into some of the LinkedIn career building stuff. So you were actually on an, you guys call it an advert. I'd call it an advertisement.
Yeah.
For LinkedIn, how did LinkedIn really help you build your career, and what advice would you give people trying to move into the sports world, maybe from another profession, maybe trying to get their feet wet in a new career?
So LinkedIn has kind of forced me out of a, like I'm social, like, you know, we're having this conversation. I'd like to think it's not awkward. But I'm not going to go out of my way to have conversations with people. I'm a bit, blinders on a lot of the time, where I'm just thinking, okay, right, so when I finish work, what design can I pump out this evening, or where's that project that I left, you know, 2 weeks ago? It's kind of pushed me into sort of expanding that horizon. It's become very apparent to me that, you know, going into, you've got to think about your next job almost. That's not to say that don't be loyal and don't enjoy what you've got and think about your career progression in the organization or the business or the company that you work in. But also, if another COVID hits, something similar, do you want to find yourself in a situation where you don't have a job, your options are fairly limited? You going out and networking is only going to help that issue or problem should it ever arise. I mean, COVID, if you haven't learned lessons from COVID, I'm not sure if you're ever going to learn lessons. You know, there's people I know in the creative industry who've lost their jobs and now work in supermarkets for, you know, the time being and stuff like that. You've got to enjoy what you have while you have it. And there's nothing wrong with sort of securing yourself for the future. So my advice is to network, reach out to people in industries that you either want to work in, companies you want to work for, send them a message. You know, say if you see the senior designer of a team, of a sport, reach out to them, give them a compliment, an actual genuine one, not just a, hi, how are you? Here's my portfolio. You know, make an effort to talk to the person, not the designer and not the person that's got something that you want, and try to build from that. You know, ask them if they've got 5 minutes to jump on a Zoom call with you and talk about a project that they've dealt with recently, or, you know, something they've put on their Behance or Dribbble, or, you know, something like that, and just try to build a genuine friendship. That's not to say that you're going to get a job out of that, but if something comes up, they'll, you know, think of you. You might be in their top five people that, oh yeah, we've got an opening as for a junior. You might be one of those people if you've kind of put yourself in the front of their brain. And likewise, posting stuff constantly on all your channels is paramount. You know, you have to work on the brand of you while you may be working on another brand. You have to sit there and really build this identity for yourself, so that people, again, you know, if you've got a CEO, for example, because LinkedIn is just full of C-suite people, and you know, maybe they're not so creatively, you know, driven or think like that. You know, me following those designers on Instagram is great, but am I going to get some freelance out of that? Probably not. You just putting out things constantly puts that little brand association, the same way that, you know, oh, I need some new shorts, and then I think of Nike, then I think of Adidas. You've got to kind of almost play that game as well, so that if someone goes, oh man, I really need a graphic designer for a t-shirt, it's, oh yeah, Jake posted that t-shirt design last week. It's just things like that that constantly put you out there, put your brand out there, and also challenge you to come up with creative, you know, concepts constantly, and it just keeps ticking over and it will feed itself.
Yeah, that's fantastic. You've talked a little bit about creating for yourself, creating opportunities, doing passion projects. Can you talk a little bit about how you think about the content that you are posting consistently, whether it's on LinkedIn or social media, whether it's Instagram, Twitter, and how you go about that process?
Yeah. I mean, as I said, it's very much a kind of, how do I fuse my job and something that I love, but also how do I fuse something that I'm really passionate about, which is, you know, American sports. And how do we kind of start to get that ball rolling? Because it's not a quick thing. You know, if Formula One turned around to me tomorrow and said, Jake, we've seen your stuff, we want to make some templates or something, I'm not just going to launch into the first thing that I kind of come up with. We'd have to sit there and conceptualize it and really, you know, what is the essence of Formula One, and how do we generate that into a 1080 by 1080 square on Instagram, and how do we really bring that excitement through? And so I almost see this as like storyboarding, or, you know, my creative process, and people just get to see it and come along for the ride. And that wasn't a quick something that I just came up with on the spot. It's something that I've thought about for a while, and it's taken a little bit of spine from me, because I've always been a bit worried. You know, me being a self-taught is a good thing and a bad thing, because you end up having that voice in the back of your head, you know, Mr. Imposter Syndrome or Mrs. Imposter Syndrome pops up and starts, you know, telling you like, well, actually, you know, you can use the pen tool, but you don't know X, Y, and Z about it. And someone's going to see that you didn't cut that guy out properly. And, you know, Megan Rapinoe in that graphic, she doesn't look great. You kind of have to just shut it out and put stuff out. And it forces me to be creative and forces me into a situation that I'm not entirely comfortable with. And that is what I'm about, really. I'm not about being comfortable or sort of relaxed. It's very much like, okay, how do we hit the next level? What's the next gear to go through?
So how do you seek out and incorporate critiques and criticism in your work? You talked about not wanting to be comfortable. And I know a lot of people who don't want to be comfortable often put their work out there a lot and take a lot of feedback. How do you get feedback? And then how do you incorporate that feedback and take nuggets from that and put it back into your work?
I mean, I'm quite lucky at this point in my career that I know more than a few creatives. I talk to them on a daily basis. Two of the guys I used to work with in the sports agency, I think we text every single day at this point. And I use a lot of people that I trust as a sounding board, really. Like, I trust them to tell me if something is rubbish or not, because I don't want you to turn around and just be like, Jake, that is amazing, mate, because it might not be. I think you just have to develop a bit of a thick skin. And at this point, I've taken my fair share of sort of critique at this point, having gone from working in an independent shoe company in my first job in design to suddenly finding myself at a sports agency in my second job. And those guys on my first day being like, hey, we need you to do a deck for, you know, the higher ups in Red Bull. And I was like, oh, sorry, what? You know, it's learning from mistakes and not taking them too personally. One of my first print jobs, for example, was me doing it in RGB, not CMYK, because I didn't know what the difference was, or that there was CMYK. So you just kind of, you chalk things up and almost mentally note it down.
It's interesting to bring this a little full circle for you with building a portfolio that you talked about in the beginning, how you didn't really have a portfolio when you were looking for design jobs. And now it sounds like you're using social media and connections and networking as your portfolio. What other recommendations would you have to people looking to get into sports to connect with other people and share their work?
So I think you've just got, I mean, surf those hashtags. That's kind of how I've done a lot of it. Twitter has been really, really great for me. I'd say Twitter is probably the one that I use the most because it's a bit more personable. I don't know, there's like a stigma about pressing the private message button on Instagram, and people aren't so quick to like a post. And there's, I don't know, Instagram, I think, is probably fallen down the rankings, the power rankings of sort of social media for designers and sports designers in particular. I think there's so many talented, you know, kids coming through that are just sort of masters at generating huge social followings and stuff like that. And I think you can get a little bit overwhelmed if you were to just be like, oh, I'm going to start an Instagram up next weekend, and you know, you've got 13 followers after 2 weeks or something. I think portfolio wise, you've just got to put some variants out there. As I said, there's all these kids kind of coming through and they're massively talented. They understand the concept of Photoshop and masking and, I don't know, layer effects and things like that. But what I have noticed now as someone who's been in the creative industry for a while now and in sport, is that there's still very rudimentary design things that I notice that a professional in the settings of the NBA or the NFL or wherever, they would notice, like, that wouldn't fly. You wouldn't be able to put that out without your sort of senior creative director or whatever telling you, hey, look, fix your alignments. There's a typo there. That's the wrong thing. Not that asset. That doesn't really work. And I think you've got to have some variance in there for those times when maybe something doesn't work. And also just to show range. Great. You can use Photoshop. Can you use InDesign? Show me a sponsorship proposal. What does that look like? Show me a print project you did. Show me, you know, you need to show that you can do more than just a really nice looking, I don't know, Jason Tatum social post. It's got to be a bit more than that. It's got to be, you know, get someone interested.
I appreciate the Jason Tatum tossing, because for people can't see that you're wearing a Chicago Bulls jersey. So I see that you're a Bulls fan, and I think I also saw that you're a Patriots fan.
Yeah, that was a good weekend in Boston.
One final question for you: what does your development look like? You talked about the personal projects, and you've talked about being self-taught. It sounds like you've put a lot of extra time in outside of work, and that grind. Obviously, you enjoy it because you didn't enjoy the grind when you were in finance, and you didn't really enjoy the grind when you were in law school and got to be a lawyer. What is it about the enjoyment of what you do that allows you to put in the extra effort, go above and beyond, you know, do passion projects on the side at night, spend your personal time to develop your skills?
Well, I mean, look, I'm wearing a Michael Jordan 23 Bulls jersey right now. The Last Dance was on a few months ago and gave you a bit of an insight into the mentality of a complete psychopath who played basketball. it's something probably a little bit similar. I always feel like I've got something to prove. I could be in this industry for another 10 years and I'll still feel like I have to prove that I'm here. So I think that will always play a part in my development on what kind of motivates me to keep doing things that I do. That's not to say I want, you know, 5 years we do this podcast again, you're like, you know, you guys turn around like, Jake, you're the greatest graphic designer the world has ever seen. I don't really care about plaudits or anything like that. It's kind of that, you know, war against yourself and complacency, because as I said, if I wanted to be complacent and comfortable, I would have stayed doing what I was doing or find a cushy job or even find a cushy graphic design job to an extent. It's all about just moving outside of that. And I think it's also the self-progression, being able to turn around and look at something you did last week, you know, 2 months ago and kind of go, yeah, I didn't really know how to do that. I mean, even like this morning, I was just fiddling around with Adobe Premiere and then I found a few options I'd never seen before. And was like, oh, awesome. Like this is, and I get such a rush off of learning something new and not, you know, as I said, it's just that feeling of complacency that I hate. I really hate to sit there and think like I'm in a rut, I'm stuck or anything like that. It needs to be like, okay, right, I'm churning something cool out. And, you know, we work in such a cool industry where not only does design shift and move, but sports shift and move. And there's a parallel there with the law world. In law, over here, the law can change quite quickly. Brexit came in and eradicated most of the law books that I had, for example, and suddenly now you have to change curriculum. And it really is a thing of what can I learn next and how do I make myself better for the future.
Yeah, I love your mindset. I think we're all very similar in that, and I think it's the pursuit of excellence to keep pushing forward. And I appreciate your insight and willingness to give back too, and that's a big part of what we're trying to do. And I felt I heard a little bit of myself in there when you were talking about LinkedIn and networking and wanting to be kind of focused on what you were doing and not necessarily feel like you're like the outgoing person at the party that wants to talk to everybody, that it's more about finding where you fit in, but also understanding that it's necessary to grow and develop and get outside your comfort zone to make that stuff happen. So yeah, that's awesome.
For sure. And as you said, I think it's so important to give back. I was in, you know, such a weird place in that sort of transition period where I didn't know anyone and I didn't know, am I doing this right? Am I not doing this right? And so, especially when you've got a platform to an extent, you know, I've suddenly got a bit of a Twitter following, much to my amusement, after, you know, 10 years of using it, and suddenly people care about what I post on there. But it's very much, you know, if someone reaches out, how do you help them and how do you sort of give them, you know, insight, or not the cheat codes, because there isn't any, but how do you kind of help them? Because it just makes you feel better knowing that you've helped someone when you would have killed for that opportunity or that conversation, you know, not even that long ago. I mean, I've only been a designer for 4 years now, I think. So it's still early days as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, my struggle with Twitter has always been keeping up with it. I feel like I've never really gotten into like following threads. I still don't know exactly how to follow a long thread, conversations back and forth, because
yeah,
I feel like I'd spend too much time trying to figure all of that out.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that changes all the time. They've got stories now, which is a bit of a crazy thing to me. But, you know, I think being adaptable is such a key part of what we do. And, you know, I suppose it kind of carries over to social and how you put yourself out there as well.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.